It's time for Sports Lit 101. And up next on the segment, we talk with the author of, quite frankly, one of the best books that we've read in the National Football League. It's called Collision of Wills, Johnny Unitas, Don Shula, and the Rise of the Modern NFL. Jack Gilden, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. It's nice to talk to you.
Man, oh man, could not put the book down. I read it in a night because it was so good. And then Bruce and I said the same thing. We were sad to get to the final pages to see it end. It was that good a read.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, that's a high compliment. I love books like that myself.
Well, you're a Baltimore guy, so obviously that's where the love of this story came and the interest in the story. But even with that and the prior knowledge that you had, I understand this book took quite a few years for you to pull together.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been as much a product of my own incompetence as, as any other reason. It was my first book, and I was trying to teach myself how to write a book, you know, as I went along. And the other thing is that my mother and my father both died while I was writing the book. And for me, writing really requires intense concentration. And if something isn't quite right in my little world, then it can throw me off track.
Well, you can tell that you have intense concentration, because one of the greatest things about this book, and I said it when I talked about it on the air before, is the way it contextualizes an era. That it, yes, it's about Johnny Unitas. Yes, it's about Don Shula. It's about all those great Colts that many people have forgotten, the Ray Berrys, the Lenny Moores, the Art Donovans, the Gino Marchettis. But it puts football in the context of American history in a way that and we've talked about a lot of football books on this program that most books don't do. Did you set out to consciously do that, or did that become part of the process?
Well, it became part of the process, and actually, I had no agent and no publisher for a very long time while I worked on the book, and a huge percentage of the book was written without one. So when I finally started to go look for those things, the aspect that you're talking about was something of a negative for me, because what I found was that people wanted to put the story in a little box, you know, they want in a category. They want to be able to say, this is a sports book or this is a social history book. And for me, I just like great, meaningful stories. I was setting out to write something that was really interesting and that would be relevant for our own times. And, you know, that was my goal in it. And so when I started to get the feedback, it was very intimidating after doing so many years of research and writing to hear that feedback. But I kind of stuck to what I thought was a good story, what I would have enjoyed reading. And then I went out and found myself an agent and a publisher that agreed with me.
Well, yeah, we love the University of Nebraska. I think that's one of the best presses in America. We get a lot from them, Syracuse, Illinois, a lot of university presses, which I think, the other thing that's really great about this book is you could have made this a sensational story about a clash of wills. You had it as a collision of wills, which I like much better, because two very strong personalities, neither man is perfect by any stretch. They collide, but you don't try to take either man down. You try to put it in the context of history.
Well, last week you did an on-air review of the book, and you said something that really pleased me. It made me feel great, because you seemed to get to exactly what I was trying to do. You said, he's not a finger pointer, he's an explainer. I don't know if you remember saying that.
Yes,
line.
I do. I thought about it on the drive up to the studio, actually.
Well, it really pleased me to hear it, because that's exactly how I see it. The world is filled with ideologues right now. Our country is being torn apart by ideology. And I don't really bring an ideology to the table, and I think as a journalist and as a writer, it would almost be disingenuous to do so. And instead, what I try to do is sit down and look at all of the facts, look at everything that happened, you know, take the information that's presented to me, and then I try to tell the story as truly and as accurately as I can, not beginning with my own personal biases about who's right, who's wrong, what does this say about race relations, what does it say about gender relations. I just try to listen and learn. I try to read and learn. And then when I learn, I try to accurately represent the things that I find. And that's my method.
Well, you certainly did it in spades here. Collision of Wills, Jack Gilden, the author, with us here on Downtown. It had to be hard for Don Shula coming into this situation because at that point, Unitas was already so well established as arguably one of the top two or three players in the entire National Football League. And how much of the difficulties they had with each other came from the fact that, as you point out, Unitas didn't have a lot of respect for Don Shula, the player.
Well, I think Don Shula thought that had everything to do with it. I think Unitas had a very different perspective on it, which was that Don Shula was a yeller and a screamer, and Don Shula tried to usurp his play-calling ability, and those seemed to be the things that really irritated Unitas. Unitas never said this that I saw, but other people said it, and you could see it almost in the quotations. But not only did Shula kind of take the play-calling ability from him, but Shula was kind of a blamer. He kind of pointed fingers at Unitas quite a bit when things went wrong. And it was funny. There was a funny quote by Alex Hawkins, one of the lesser players on the team, and he said, when we win as a team. But when we lose, it's all Johnny Unitas' fault. And that was pretty accurate as to how it was sometimes, especially after the 64 championship game when the Colts got shut out but also gave up 27 points, and Shula kind of pointed the dirty end of the stick at Unitas.
Well, one of the things I think a lot of people forget is how dominant the Colts were and how dominant Johnny Unitas was. A friend of the show, Upton Bell, will argue till the last breath he takes that no one's been as good as Unitas, and I might agree. How much does Baltimore retain that history in a way that maybe the rest of the country doesn't?
Well, there's the statue of Johnny U in front of the modern day stadium, and for a long time until recently, the marching band, what was the Colts marching band and became the Ravens marching band, they carried a flag in his honor that was blue and white with the number 19 on it. In the last several years, I think the number of seats they had at the stadium were lessened, and the flag was finally put away because of that reason. But they every time they marched, that they carried the banner of number 19 with them. And in Baltimore, he's revered like no other individual in the history of this is the city of H.L. Mencken. It's the city that protected America from foreign invasion in the War of 1812. We gave the world Thurgood Marshall, one of the most significant lawyers in the history of the country. But the one person that they focus on here is Johnny Unitas. They love their connection to him.
It's interesting, too, as a measure of how the game has changed, Jack, that these days, because of rule changes, quarterbacks, Tom Brady comes to mind, are pretty well protected and, well, I don't want to say soft, but there are some pretty boys out there playing that position. Johnny Unitas was not that, and I love the story about Alex Karras, who says, hey, Unitas is every bit as intimidating as anybody on the defense, and so you mentioned quite often when he'd have a chance to tackle Unitas, rather than throw him to the ground, he'd just kind of wrap his arms around him because he was intimidated by Unitas.
Well, I think in his case, what he was saying there was that he respected Unitas so much. The one who was intimidated by Unitas, or at least admitted it, was Merlin Olsen, who would smash Unitas to the ground and then described being in the pileup with him and seeing his eyes open and those bright eyes glaring back at him, showing no fear, no pain whatsoever, but just resolve. And he said, well, we knew, even as we're smashing him to the ground, we knew he's going to get right up and he's going to embarrass us. He's going to humiliate us. He's going to beat us in the last second. And he was an extraordinarily intimidating figure in that way. I think his style of play almost undressed those defenses and exposed these men and their weaknesses. And it was in some ways deeply humiliating to them, but they respected what he could do.
I can't imagine a quarterback being told he had to leave the field because he had a bloody nose and then just reaching down and sticking dirt up it so he didn't have to leave. Unitas' toughness is legendary, but I also think that a younger generation may not understand what a brilliant field general he was. I'm a Giants fan. 1958 still hurts, okay? I mean, that game, probably the greatest game ever played. Unitas showed not just his extraordinary physical ability, but his thinking.
Well, he was a deeply intellectual football player, you know, by the standards of football players and within the context of the game of football. He was extraordinarily intellectual. And the Colts themselves really tried to play up that aspect of him. I found photographs from the 1950s that ran in the local newspapers of Johnny U with his shoulder pads on and his practice jersey on, sitting at a little children's school desk, studying out of the notebook, watching the films, and they really promoted the idea that he was this chess player and this thinker. You know, one thing that you had made the connection to Tom Brady early on, I think that's where Tom Brady does resemble Unitas quite a bit. But you were talking about some of these players today being soft. I think that the game of football has lost some of its, it's not quite as compelling as it was in Unitas' day, because I think the real attraction to that game, as wrong as it may be, was the danger of the quarterback.
Sure.
He's standing back there with barbarisms going on all around him, and he has to think his way out of that problem, and then he's going to get really smashed. He was the most vulnerable man on the field in those days, and now it almost feels like he's living in a gated community.
Well, and as you pointed out, Earl Morrill suffered, he got, when Marchetti got even with him, as it were, he never was the same player again.
No, that was Frank Ryan. Actually.
I meant Frank Ryan. I'm sorry.
Right. And Ryan had made the unfortunate decision of continuing to go for a touchdown in the waning moments of that championship game. And so Marchetti told him he was going to get him. And then the next week there was the Pro Bowl, and they really smashed him. And I don't think that Marchetti himself ever knew just how much damage that he did to Frank Ryan. Ryan was laid up for months. He was in a full body cast. When they first patched him up at the field itself, they put some sort of an adhesive from his arm onto his chest, so his arm was connected to his chest. And then when they wanted to separate it later on, they had to lacerate the skin to do it. And then finally, the shoulder and the arm were never the same again. That guy enjoyed an unbelievable moment of redemption that day in the championship game. And then by a week later, it was all over for him in a lot of tangible ways.
We're talking with Jack Gilden, author of Collision of Wills, Johnny Unitas, Don Shula, and the Rise of the Modern NFL. Is the Don Shula that worked with Johnny Unitas in Baltimore a work in progress? How is he different from the Don Shula who became the Miami Dolphins head coach?
Well, in a couple of key ways. Interestingly, Shula was the engineer of the perfect season in Miami, but his winning percentage in Baltimore was higher. His best days were in Baltimore. His salad days were in Baltimore, believe it or not. Even though he went to Miami, he had that great season, and he won two Super Bowls there. I think he went to five Super Bowls there. So that was one way he was different, is that he was a little bit better in Baltimore. And then another way that he was different is that he seemed, according to journalists that I talked to, he was a much calmer personality in Miami. Now, the Miami players would disagree. They would say he was still very, very difficult and a shouter and tough. But according to the journalists in Baltimore, he seemed much, much more stoic in Miami than he had been in Baltimore. Several of the players really described a very hard, difficult personality in Baltimore. So he must have really, really been something when he was here.
Jack, if you look back at this now and look at the football of that period and the football now, is there room for a Johnny U today?
Well, I don't know that there could be a Johnny U today because, again, I think that the change in the rules – I don't know that you'll find another compelling man like Johnny U. I think, too, it's like looking at modern-day sluggers and comparing them to Babe Ruth. We could see some great guys today, but they'll never seem as mythical as Ruth, because Ruth was the one that that kind of invented baseball in that way. He's the one that unlocked the potential of the home run. He's the one that seemed to do it better than anyone else. And so that's kind of, that mythology is kind of attached to Ruth. And I think Unitas kind of unlocked the forward pass. He unlocked the strategy and the timing of the game. You can clearly see that guys like Bill Walsh copied the Colts later on. And they're credited with creating that West Coast offense, but they were really copying aspects of the offense that Johnny Unitas ran in Baltimore. And I think the fact that Unitas was that trailblazer sets them apart from everybody else.
Well, it's an absolutely wonderful read. Collision of Wills, Johnny Unitas, Don Shula, and the Rise of the Modern NFL. Jack Gilden, we love the book. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about it with us.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Well, it was good to finally meet over the phone, Jack, and best of luck.
See you soon, guys. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jack Gilden, terrific book, Collision of Wills. MF, you're a fan, or if you'd like to learn about the glory days in many ways of the National Football League, man, what a good book.
Well, and one of the great things about reading a book like this is I know something about this, right? But I learned so much from reading the book. And a book where you learn things, to me, is a great book.
What's remarkable when you talk about Unitas and being in a different time? You look at the list of career leaders in passing yardage in the National Football League, and it is dominated by guys who've played in the last 30 years, most of them in the last 15 or 20 years. Peyton Manning, number one. Brett Favre, number two. Drew Brees, three. Brady, four. Marino, five. Eli Manning.
In fact, I thought Brees just passed.
This was before the season began.
Yeah.
Philip Rivers.
Number eight
all time. Ben Roethlisberger. But still on that list in the top 20 with all these modern guys at number 19 with 40,239 yards. By the way, in a different game and a much shorter schedule, there's Johnny Unitas at number 19.
Yeah, you look at the number of fewer games that he played compared to some of these guys. I mean, Marino put up gaudy numbers at times, but they played 16-game regular season.
Yeah.
They were done after 15 games in those days. So if you went to three rounds of the playoffs, and you played almost 20 games in one season, and all those numbers count. So, I believe that if you go by minutes played, that Unitas is the most effective passer in history.
Yeah. Fun conversation. A really terrific book.